the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore on the Skype line, throwing cheap shots.
I'm a dirty player, Zach. I'm a dirty player that targets people, and then one of my teammates is going to rat me out, and we're going to be in a Pulp Fiction noir novel. It's going to be amazing.
I'm already sick of this whole thing, because...
You're sick of it. I was so excited to write about basketball last night. I was like, oh, this is like, they adjusted, and there's all these things to talk about, and the Warriors play great at the end, and I was so impressed with Harrison Barnes and all of this stuff, and then, nope, I got hijacked by the narrative. Like, Mark Jackson pooped on my desk.
Yeah, it's just annoying. Well, I don't even care that he said it. I care that people are talking about it, I guess.
Because I care that he insinuated that it was a purposeful thing by the organization. That's a huge accusation to throw out there.
Right, and what is that doing? It's protecting his players, and it's getting the attention on his next game to not be on his team, which is exactly where you would want it to be if you're the coach. Like, all he did was a Phil Jackson tactic, and it was brilliant, and everybody is falling for it, including us, because now we're talking about it.
Yeah,
that's what he did. That's what coaches do. Coaches are just, all right. We just lost a game. We can't think about losing game six and going back to game seven. So they were dirty. Like, I think he believes that it was a dirty play. I personally don't, but it is weird that he kicked at his ankle. Like, that's you just don't see that. So I can see why you would think that is. I still don't think it was a dirty play. I think it was just a weird play. But to take it like further from there is kind of smart by him.
I still struggle with this idea of that, like, George Karl went to his players and said, "We're going to try and attack Steph Curry. We're going to take Steph Curry out." What? After 30 years in the NBA,
why wouldn't he?
George Karl is organizing an effort like a mob boss. And then one of his players or staff members went to Mark Jackson and said, "I don't agree with it. I want you to know."
First of all, if you don't think JaVale McGee didn't say that.
It's Andre Miller. I'm convinced.
Andre Miller's been trying to...
Y'all, this is sabotage.
Andre Miller's been submarining their efforts all week long.
Andre Miller is the mole. And now that people on Twitter saying... Andre Iguodala was talking to Mark Jackson on the sideline with his mouth covered. And I'm just like, oh my God. If you do want to know actually where Ben Hockman and I think it came from, at practice earlier this week, Del Curry walked by during the Nuggets practice, and George Karl said, "I'm going to have to knock down your son," as in, "He's playing so well, ha ha.
Right.
I got to take him out."
Right.
And, you know, they both kind of laughed about it. And then, like, I think Karl, like, ended up saying, like, he's like, "Oh, good joke," or whatever. And then Carl's like, "Is it? Like, kidding around?" And so maybe that's what Mark Jackson's did. It's just stupid. And you're right. It is brilliant because it's gotten it off of them. I think it's also kind of a gamble because if they lose game six, it's just been a distraction.
But I think that's a better distraction than, oh, now you guys can't afford to lose.
Yeah.
Game six, because then you have to go back to game seven in Denver. I do think, like, I don't see why Karl wouldn't say we're going to attack Steph Curry and be physical with him.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. Steph Curry is destroying you because you guys can't get anywhere near him. So why wouldn't you be physical with him? And why wouldn't you tell your team, hey, bump him. Coming off screens, bump him. Bump him when he dribbles. Do what, like, that just seems like good coaching to me. It doesn't mean he's saying, you know, karate chop his ankle. Like, I don't think he's saying that, but he should absolutely say, like, yeah, attack him. Be physical with him. Beat him up a little. Like, that's what you do. That's what you tell a team to do. It doesn't mean that, you know, Kenneth Faried's holding a lead pipe somewhere. Who, by the way, won Citizenship Award. Of course he did. It couldn't have been scripted better.
I love the NBA. Don't you love the NBA?
I saw the tweet. I saw the tweet from the PR, from NBA PR, and I was like, of course. That makes sense.
Jason Kidd won the other award. For community assistance after getting a DUI in the offseason. And then Kenneth Faried on the days being accused of being a dirty player. All fans would flip out about this. It's just what fans do.
Yeah.
this is what I worry about with the Warriors. It's honestly what part of me wonders if the NBA has purposely kept the Warriors out of the playoffs for a couple of years, because like, we can't have these fans in these playoffs. people in some sort of psychiatric institute. Like, you don't let them in certain rooms. Yeah. It's kind of the same deal.
I mean, you looked at the play that where Fareed, like, early on, like, trips him or bumps him or something. Like, it does look like he's trying to trip him for no reason, right? But it also could just be two guys, like, establishing position. And, you know, like, it's like if you're walking past someone and... you're walking past someone in a hallway or in a concourse or something, and you both bump shoulders. Well, neither of you were willing to move. It doesn't mean, like, you're trying to hurt the other person.
Here's a breaking news alert. Kenneth Faried doesn't set good screens.
He really doesn't.
No one on the Nuggets sets good screens. No one on Denver sets good screens outside of Andre Iguodala. He's the only guy
which I think is why... Ty Lawson just doesn't even care if the screen is set anymore. He just goes and hopes it's not a foul.
Nope, just goes.
Because he knows he's not getting anything out of it.
He'd rather they be moving, honestly.
The play was incredible.
I said this on Twitter, and Warriors fans flipped out even more so than normal. Look, I stay away from Kenneth Faried for the most part, because Kenneth and he and I actually talked for about 20 minutes last night about just various things. I don't talk to Faried because he doesn't like talking to the media. And he was like, it's not that I don't like you guys, I just don't like talking. He's like, I don't like the attention. And I was like, you don't like attention. But anyway, having talked to him a few times, like enough to have a working knowledge of who he is, there's a really high probability, in my mind, he has no idea about Steph Curry's ankle. He doesn't pay attention to that kind of stuff. Like, the guy just goes. He just does things. He's like a dog chasing cars. Like... he doesn't really keep aware. There are guys in that locker room that definitely know Steph Curry has a bad ankle.
Yeah.
I could name four of them right now that I know, not for a fact, but I would say within 80% confidence that they do. Kenneth Faried's not one of them.
Well, I mean, he did see him turn his ankle in game 3.
Right, but how many times has he seen a guy turn an ankle in a game?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know that he does or doesn't know about Steph Curry's ankles. I do think, like, someone could have said... I mean, if there was a hit out on him, I think someone could have said, hey, Kenneth, he's got a bad ankle, by the way.
Are we talking about – good God.
No, I'm not saying that happened. I'm just saying, like, he has no clue.
It's just like the phrases – that's why I wrote the Street Fight Noir line last night for my headline. It's because I'm like, this is, like, so ridiculous. It's a basketball game. Good God.
Any fan base would have done this. Like, if Draymond Green had done this to Ty Lawson and he had a bad ankle, yeah, it would have been the same thing. Like, it's just people love to freak out about stuff.
Yeah. What's weird, though, is to me is I actually got this line of a reasoning line. Well, the coach said. Like, that's what they're saying. Like, what?
So what?
You cult leader? What is happening?
What are we calling this? Is it ankle gate? Is it dirty gate? We have to wash the dirty gate, paint the dirty gate?
Hit gate.
I like dirty gate.
No, it needs like a secret code name, like an operation, like a CIA operation, because there's hitmen involved.
Yeah.
Like.
Operation Tendon Snap.
I'm trying to that's not bad. We have to think about it. We have to come back to it. In general, what were your perceptions of the game last night?
I thought. It was refreshing to see Denver switch up their defense. I thought their defense was fantastic, and you got to see, like, Denver played like themselves because they were no longer getting destroyed on defense. Like, they were physical, they were switching, they didn't give room. I mean, I rewatched all of Steph Curry's missed threes last night, and they're all, like, pretty bad shots. Like, they're on him. I don't know what the official box score says, but on the NBA media site, it had him for seven three-point attempts, but two of them were inside the arc. So I think it was just a screw-up on their part. So of the 5 threes he took, I would say you could maybe say 2, if you want to really be generous, say 2 of them were decent shots. But for the most part, they were just bad shots. Like, they were all over him. I don't think they were all over him in a way where he's being fouled or anything. I think it was just good physical defense that didn't cross any lines other than when Kenneth Faried took a BB gun and shot him in the ankle.
They finally... Maybe we should go with the long movie title approach. The assassination of Stephen Curry by the hitman, Kenneth Faried.
No, by the manimal,
Kenneth Faried. I talked to several players, and they finally were like, we stopped worrying about the rim. If they get there, we decide we're going to foul Draymond Green and make him, if we, play physical, try and get the block. If we can't, and that's what they really did, was they started fouling Festus Ezeli and Draymond Green underneath. Yep. And play. They were like, you know what? The bigs are playing out. If they get inside, they get inside. But no more of the Stephen Curry step back three crap. We're just done with it. And they really attacked him, and they didn't chase him more. Carl also talked a lot about, in the first games, what they were doing is they were still trying to read, okay, well, if he does this, then Y. If he does this, then Z. And instead, they were just, no matter what, don't let him shoot.
Right.
They just made that decision, is no matter what, try and prevent the shot. We'll take anything else. And then they, surprisingly, it took them this long to realize it. Stephen Curry, and I'm not, okay, I'm trying to think of an appropriate level of criticism, is not significantly above average at layups. Is that a fair analysis?
He's bad at finishing at the
rim. Thank you. He's bad at layups.
No, he's real. That's what I wrote that thing about, I wrote that thing yesterday of, is he on fire or is he more aware?
Which was amazing, by the way.
Thank you. And you look like all of his, like, I just put the four closest zones to the hoop on the shooting chart as, like, those are his inside shots. He's taking 7% fewer of those shots in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. And that's a smart thing for him because he's a much better jump shooter than he is a finisher around the basket. Like, he's bad at finishing.
And, like, we talk about him as the best shooter in the league and the best shooter ever, and all of these hyperboles that are coming about him, and the best shooting backcourt. Layups are shots, y'all. Like,
well, no, I mean, that's we're talking about shooting motion, though.
If you talk about, like, jump shot, like, I'm fine with calling him the best jump shooter in the NBA.
Right, that's what the best shooter in the NBA is.
Okay. I think that should probably, I think layups should factor more into this, but, it's still a field goal attempt, but okay. Because I think that's, to me, it's like, that's why, like, I think Kevin Durant's a better shooter, because there's nowhere on the floor he can't hit from. Stephen Curry, it's got to be 18, it's got to be 16 to wherever for him to reliably hit.
Wait, hold on. Do you not think he's the best shooter in the league?
I think he's the best pure jump. Kevin Durant's so good.
Oh, come on. He shot 46% from three.
Yeah, he's the best jump shooter in the league. You know who I thought was awesome last night? Harrison Barnes.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Harrison Barnes was great. He played so well within himself. Like, rookies, like, they will always get out and try and do more or try and do different things that they're trying to fit in and find a role. And he just played, all of his decision making was so good. Even when he was missing open shots, like, there were still quality looks that sometimes those guys miss. Like, it just kind of, but he played so well, I thought.
Yeah. Well, the thing when I watched him in college, I was like, this guy's too safe. He just didn't try anything spectacular at all. And I think that's why, he took such a hit publicly, is that, well, he's not doing anything spectacular, so he's not good. He's not some great player. And I don't know that he's going to end up being a great player, but he is very aware and very good at knowing what he should and shouldn't do. And he probably needs to break out of that a little bit and try to be more of an athlete and try to be more... I'm not saying in this series, but just moving forward, like, he needs to be more assertive of and capable of maximizing his talents. But last night, like, I think he took 10 threes, and I think maybe one of them was a bad shot. Like, yeah. A majority of them were open or mildly contested, and he did a great job of just like, all right, the Nuggets are going to make me make them pay. And he kind of, he did it for a while. Like, he kept him in it for a while, and he did some really good things offensively without trying to do too much.
I did like what the Nuggets did, though, where they got caught in the corner. And because this happens to every team, even the best offensive teams. You got one guy trying to guard both the corner and the wing shooter.
Yeah.
And Brewer looked at Harrison Barnes and then looked back at Curry and was like, screw it. And he went back to Curry. And when they did that, the Warriors oddly got a little rattled.
Yeah.
Like, when the Nuggets weren't running them off, they were kind of like they were passing. passing up open looks to go inside, and I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you've shot 900% from three in this series. Keep firing.
Right.
It's a theme from Spaceballs. Keep firing, blank holes. Like, that's what I don't understand. It was very odd. I thought that, I mean, Andre Iguodala, holy crap.
He had an above-average game.
When he is good, he is amazing. Yeah. When he is not good,
he's horrible. I mean, he's knocking down jumpers. Like, that was a pretty special performance by him.
Yeah. But mostly for me, I like the fact that Andre Iguodala is the one guy in this series coming off of a playoff team that played slow pace last year who wants to really control the offense and grind.
Yeah.
He's been the one guy in the series to be like, we won in the regular season because we ran. I'm pushing the ball.
Yeah.
Like, he has forced the action, and it's really cool to see. Zach asked me what Andre Miller was in plus-minus in the second half last night.
What was Andre Miller in plus-minus in the second half last night?
Minus 14.
This is a fascinating thing for me.
It must stop!
Because Denver fans, at least the ones I interact with and I see complaining on Twitter, think that George Karl is Randy Whitman. I mean, this guy needs to be fired in-game, bad. Now, George Karl is a fantastic coach. He is a great coach. He is one of the best coaches in the league. He also is someone who has this weird loyalty to letting Andre Miller do stuff on the basketball court. Now, sometimes this can be good. Sometimes this can be their downfall. But I think we need to recognize that George Karl is both a great coach and simultaneously, oddly, in a three-legged race with Andre Miller at all times.
Scott Brooks coaches the best team in the Western Conference when healthy. He loves Derek Fisher. There will come a time.
Coaches love veterans.
There will come a time when Greg Popovich, he's done it, he did in 2007 a little bit, but they managed to get their veterans in auxiliary roles. There will come a time when Greg Popovich relies on a veteran too much.
Yeah.
That will happen. It's just they trust these guys based off of what they see the entire year in practice and as a leader and their experience and everything they've seen in the league, and that influences. And also, I was talking about this with a reporter last night. Some coaches, not just all coaches, are human, and we have loyalties. You get emotional attachments, and sure. Carl's got an emotional attachment to Miller.
Especially in that line of work, especially there.
I think Andre Miller could be a huge impact if they were to make it to the second round. I think he could be a really good player against the Spurs based off of if he's able to get Gary Neal defending or if he's able to guard even Danny Green a little bit. This is a nightmare series of matchups for him, and he needs to not be on the floor at all because not only is he – you said it last night. I don't care how effective you're going to be. Putting a hand up is better than not putting a hand up.
Yeah, I mean – It's probably not going to – I still don't think it's going to bother Steph Curry whether you put a hand up that can't touch the basketball at all or not. But yeah, exactly. It's going to – I think it'll affect Jarrett Jack. I think it'll affect Klay Thompson. I think it'll affect Harrison Barnes. And he just – he has this mindset of, oh, I got beat. Crap. And it's like, no, you still try. And maybe he is too much of a veteran to know, that's not going to affect somebody. That's not going to affect a pro basketball player, but it might.
Throw us a bone and do it anyway.
I have a solution. What if, now this can't happen now, but it could happen for next season. And I realize it's very unlikely, considering the people we're talking about here. What if George Karl stays on to coach the Nuggets, because he is such a good coach, and they just get rid of Andre Miller?
I know, it's a thrilling prospect.
Then could maybe we have some common ground, Nuggets fans? Maybe then we could say, hey, George Karl's not so bad.
In 435, Julian Stone was -2. I really want to see more of Julian Stone.
I still don't believe he's a real player.
He is.
No, he's like a created player on 2K.
No, he's...
tell me, I mean, you've...
I'll give you that.
You've talked to him. You've talked to him up close. He's pixelated, right?
Yeah, a little bit. There's a little bit of a glitch there.
That's what I thought. All of a sudden, his arm's missing.
It's very hot.
All of a sudden, he turns and his arm's missing.
I like the Warriors in Game 6. There was a certain point last night where I did feel like they came back in the second half because they could shoot,
Yeah.
But I do feel like in large part the Warriors are kind of like, let's go back home and take care of this.
Yeah, I kind of felt like there was a part, maybe with a minute and a half to go, where it was still within range, but it wasn't very likely, and they just kind of thought, all right, we still have game six at home.
Yep. One of the best things about this Mark Jackson nonsense is no one's going to start talking. Like, it's going to help to bury the Andrew Bogut story.
Oh, yeah, which is confusing.
I'm fine. Actually, no. He said, I'm okay. The tone, I'm learning that you have to, with Bogut, you have to try and watch the body language, because he's going to say the same things, and it's, I'm fine versus I'm okay. And he said the same things over and over again. He did not look great in the locker room.
Yeah.
But he's got 2 days. They'll shoot him up. Maybe he'll be fine.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a thing for them. Is,
and how about those Nuggets going big to start out? There's
not
anomaly.
Even big, just traditional.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, compared to what they were doing, you didn't have a 6'6 guy playing center.
Hey, Wilson Chandler's not playing the five. Amazing.
Amazing. He's actually pretty decent guarding wings when he's not trying to help off of a big man.
Yeah. Wilson Chandler is a really good wing guy, and I wanted him at the three the entire season. I don't know why he insisted on playing him low. It helps in some situations, but this was not one of them.
Yeah.
It took a while to figure that out. JaVale wasn't great last night. I mean, 4 of 9. It's another one where the numbers look good. He was +2, but I felt like Kufis played a lot better and didn't get much of the credit from his teammates or his coach. So.
Yeah. I actually felt bad for Wilson Chandler because he had a chance. I think they were up – they were up 5 with maybe two and a half minutes ago, something like that. And he missed a huge 3 from the left corner. And I was like, oh, he needed that. Like, that would have been a good thing for him. Like, that would have put the game away. That would have been great. And then, I don't know, like a bad shot or a turnover happened. And then he got one in the right corner and knocked it down. I was like, there you go.
Yep. Yeah, it was and they need that from him. You know, him going 6 shots. See, he had 6 makes on 14 attempts. And 5 of them were 3s, and that's how he makes 19 points on 14 shots, even though he stopped 6 of 14. So,
yeah.
Just a really good night. Ty Lawson, we talked about how Ty Lawson doesn't have energy to do, he's focusing on offense, he doesn't have energy on defense, and vice versa. He did it both last night. He attacked Curry, he attacked Jack, he was creating, even if they're getting around him, he's doing enough to deter and annoy them, and then offensively he was great again.
Yeah.
So, great game from him. Game 6 will be fun. I expect the Warriors to win because I think that they'll shoot better, but we'll, at least we're going to see. So, whiskey. No Pepto. Whiskey.
I want to be critical of the Clippers because they did not play well. And I don't even feel like Chris Paul played well in the second half. I think he knew, like, oh, this is going to be on me. I have to take shots. And he took a bunch. I think he took, like, 13 shots in the second half.
He did 14 points on 13 shots.
Yeah. And he only had 1 or 2 assists.
One assist, 1 turnover.
Yeah. Like, I think he knew he had to take the onus in that. But, like, I just don't feel like that's a good strategy for an entire half against the second-best defensive team in the league. And you can see just how much they miss a healthy Blake Griffin right now. And what the hell is Vinny Del Negro doing scheduling a full practice a day before a playoff game? How is that a decision? Why is Blake Griffin getting hurt in practice?
Not just that, but apparently it was like a hardcore, full speed, go all out.
Right. Like, why are you doing that? That's stupid.
This doesn't sound like Vinny Del Negro at all.
No.
The Griffin thing is interesting. I think from the perspective of it helps them in the first half. He's been not great in the second halves of games. I think part of it, though, is it gets them, like, their matchups all get out of whack.
Yeah.
And that means more time. And then he plays Lamar Odom more, and then he plays,
This was a big stat for me last night. Roni Turioff played 9 minutes. Ryan Hollins played 9 minutes.
You can't
have those guys combining for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And that's where I think Blake Griffin's missed. Like, even if he's not playing well, the threat of him is big. No one gives a damn if Turioff's out there or if Ryan Hollins is out there. Like, I don't think I think the Grizzlies, like, just kind of giggles themselves when they see those guys on the floor in a playoff game.
Yeah, it was good. Marc Gasol is a really good NBA player.
He's top 200. At least.
He can play a little bit. He can go. I will say, I reveled in it because it was fun. Tayshaun Prince isn't knocking those shots down again. Like, I know it. Let me have the night to get people to stop talking about Rudy Gay. Let me have the night. I know it's not happening again, but I needed the night. That's like, just give me that one and let's move on. He was huge, though. You know.
Yeah. Oh, he was. He was as much of a reason down the stretch for them winning that game as anybody.
I'll tell you, when Zach and Mark combine for 40 plus, it's just
that's hard to beat.
You know, you can get with Hollins going 10 deep. You can get 40 to 50 to 60 points from another 8 players.
Yeah.
And especially with Mike Conley, he's playing at the level that he's at right now. Which, Mike Conley is not an elite point guard. He's never going to be an elite point guard. But that doesn't mean that Mike Conley can't be recognized as a really, truly great point guard in this league.
I mean, the key for him is attacking and getting to the line, which he did last night. He had 12 free throw attempts. It's just when he's able to do that, like, it's not going to open up their offense to where they're a juggernaut, but they're more than competent when he's able to do that.
Are you, by the way, if you want a really interesting number that doesn't tell the entire story, but I think is probably deserves a mention, with Quincy Pondexter on the bench, Chris Paul is shooting 59% from the field.
Yeah.
When Quincy Pondexter is on the floor, Chris Paul is shooting 37% from the field.
That's a big difference.
That's like a 20% difference.
Almost.
And wow, Chris Paul's a minus 35 with Pondexter on the court in the playoffs. Holy crap.
They have to find – they are just – the Clippers are so stagnant on offense, they have to find a way to correct that.
Lamar Odom dribbled around for like 7 seconds last night before throwing it to Jamal Crawford for pull up three.
Yeah.
That he hit, but still. Like, they just did. Like, so much of their offense just turns into, like, no one. It's like no one knows what they're doing. I feel like they're not even running sets, they're just doing things.
I feel like watching Lamar Odom is like watching Jackie Moon play basketball at this point. There is no rhyme or reason to what he's doing. He's just going rover. It's just like, I expect him to wrestle a bear at halftime. And I'm not even going to make the obvious Khloe Kardashian joke here. I'm not going to do it. I'm above that.
I mean, are you surprised that what they've done to Chris Paul?
I'm surprised what they've done to the entire offense. I think you can, in a stagnant offense, I mean, we kind of saw this in New Orleans, right? Like, in a stagnant offense, where not a lot's going on, you can make Chris Paul be inefficient. And, I mean, he's still great. He was 11 of 24. He had 35 points. But you can take away his passing. If you take away his passing, you know, you can deal with his scoring. It's the combination that you can't deal with. And it's just nothing. I mean, Jamal Crawford had 15 points on 14 shots, and nobody else broke 7 points. Like, that's just astonishing to me.
I'm terrified about Game 6, but...
That's just the reverse jinx.
It would be pretty amazing if... I'm truly stunned. I really thought the Clippers were going to win this series. I thought it might be in 5. I put it at 6 because I had faith in Memphis being tough enough to win 2. I'm genuinely pretty shocked last night. I'm pretty shocked.
I'm shocked they did this in L.A.
Yeah, that was...
I'm not shocked that they're making a series. I think I had Clippers in 7. I was hoping it would be a really great series, and so far it's turned out to be. But I didn't think a road team would win in this series.
I mean, part of it, I mean, I guess I'm not wholly surprised, just because, like, Kevin Harlan opened the broadcast last night, coming to you from the Rocket Staples Center, and I was like, Kevin, is that sarcastic? Like, when has Staples Center ever been raucous, ever, except for, like, a Kings game?
No, it's good for Clippers games.
Is it?
Yeah, when that crowd gets going because they're flying around dunking, that place is great, at least coming through on
good.
TV.
I think it's good. It's not Lakers, but I didn't really think it would be I mean, like, it ain't going to be like Friday night in Memphis is going to be. Holy crap, there's going to be some drunk people there.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you think about when Blake Griffin has done these incredible things, or when DeAndre Jordan killed Brandon Knight. Like, that place went nuts. That place will go nuts at a good stretch. Jamal Crawford went off in game two. That place was crazy.
I'm kind of surprised Crawford hasn't been more assertive.
They're really taking away his driving. They've taken away lanes for him, and he's not getting that one foot into the key where you like his shots when he kind of gets to the middle of the floor. He's forced to just jack up bad shots. Tony Allen's done a great job on it.
Do we have twists left in either Golden State or Denver series, or do we kind of think that we know how these things are going to go?
I expect Golden State. I mean, it's weird. Like we saw Denver make the adjustments they needed to make. Now what are the Warriors going to do, or are the Nuggets going to be able to keep that mindset and still play that defensively? I tend to believe, like I've seen for more games in the series than not, that they don't play that way. So I kind of lean towards the Warriors finishing this off in game six. For some reason, I feel like the Clippers might win game six in Memphis, but that might just be a pipe dream of me wanting seven games out of the series.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you, though.
Well, I mean, it'll depend on Blake Griffin. If Blake Griffin can be, one, in the game, two, 75% of himself, I think the Clippers can win game six. Otherwise, I expect Memphis to probably dominate and kind of like step on their throats.
It's a big moment for the franchise, I think, in general. It's a big moment for every single member of the organization, like game six in Memphis. I think way bigger than it is for the Clippers.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't think Chris leaves. I just don't.
I think there's a shakeup, though.
Well, yeah, but I think there's going to be a shakeup anyway. Like, they can win this series and then get outclassed, and I can still see. Like, I don't see any way VDN survives.
Oh, I think if they make the Western Conference Finals, he survives. For sure.
Right, but, well, I guess with the Thunder injured.
Yeah, there's no Westbrook. That's a very real possibility.
Yeah.
But at this point, if they lose game six, he is definitely out.
Yeah, gonna be fun though. Fun games. Before we jump into the last night or tonight's games, real quick, just came through while we were podcasting. Jim Boylan has been relieved of his duties or has stepped down. I don't know which. Anyway, the Bucks need a new head coach. So
I am shocked.
Right. Not a bad job by Boylan. I mean, he really didn't do horrible.
Sure.
Did fine. I really kind of wish that they hadn't re-signed Hammond. As much as I like Hammond, I kind of would like to see Hammond go somewhere else and then see another GM. It's really weird. I've always hated the idea of the coaches with massive power. I'm always like, no, you need to distribute and have an organizational structure and not really like solidify. I'm at a point now with the way kind of rosters are and all this stuff, I really want more power for the coaches.
Really?
We talked about Emperor SVG. Like, that's kind
right. of and you important. And you want Emperor Mike D'Antoni in Charlotte.
No, actually, I don't. I want a very Colangelo D'Antoni relationship.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not Colangelo, but somebody else in Charlotte, like Rich Cho and D'Antoni. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, well, that's why I think the whole Minnesota situation is so intriguing, because Rick Adelman took over the roster duties essentially last summer for everything except like the Brandon Roy signing and Alexi Shved signing. Everything else was Adelman. And not negotiating contracts, but saying, like, go get me that player. I want this player. This is what we need to do kind of thing. Let's get rid of these guys. And you saw a dramatic improvement in the roster. Now, that didn't translate to the season because they were injured. But if Khan is out and Flip comes in, is it still going to be that same dynamic? Like, that's intriguing. Adler might be one of those guys that should have this emperor power you're talking about. But it's also very exhausting for. I don't think people realize how difficult of a situation that is for coaches who have to assume both duties.
So it's tonight's games. Do we get the ending we want here?
Probably not.
Really?
I mean, the Thunder should win. I feel like the
Thunder at home. Teams aren't like Houston won their game. They got their one.
I don't know. It's just Jason Terry's mouthing off, and then he would be annoying enough to keep this thing going.
And Kenyon Martin.
Kenyon Martin talking about funerals. J.R. Smith saying he doesn't know who Jason Terry is.
This is like
now you gotta love J.R.
This is a massive combination of guys with way more ego than brain power. I mean, it's just.
I love I mean, because seriously, like, you know, KG and Pierce are just like, Jason, shut up. And I would assume, like, Melo and Jason Kidd are just like, Kenyon, shut up. What are you doing?
I bet Melo's not. I would think the Kidd is. I think Kidd is like, oh, God, Kenyon, not again. Not again.
I don't know. I feel like Melo is, Melo's kind of a quiet guy. I don't think he likes a lot of that. I think he likes attention, but I don't think he likes a lot of, like, the wrong attention for that kind of stuff. He's very good with the media. He's very savvy with the media. I bet he doesn't like this. He probably wants them talking about how great his play is.
Pacers Knicks is going to be so ugly.
Oh, I might take that series off.
I see. I'm thinking about requesting to go out to see a game or two because I want to see. I think there's a good possibility that there's going to be a full out brawl.
Yeah.
I really think David West and Kenyon Martin could go. And then afterwards, there'll be nothing but a piece of skin with lipstick on it left over.
I'm not sure I believe Kenyon Martin is as tough as he believes. I mean, Tim Thomas called him out.
Yep.
Like, I think Tim Thomas is tougher than we all know, but come on.
The Knicks are entirely comprised of guys where, like, everyone else is like, the Knicks are entirely comprised of roll your eyes guys, except for, like, Jason Kidd, Steve Novak, Copeland.
Camby.
Even Camby a little bit.
Sheed. Kurt Thomas is gone.
That's pretty much it. Like, the rest of the, and Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rest of the guys are very, like, it's a lot of rolling your eyes of okay, all right.
It's like, yeah, sure you are. Let's get back to work.
Like Raymond Felton with, you know, the I'm going to get revenge on Portland game.
Right.
Like, and, you know, Kenyon Martin in general and J.R. Smith in general. Yeah, so the Knicks are better. They should win tonight. The Lions Knicks by 9.
I think they probably win, and it's probably a blowout.
So
I like that. I would go Knicks by 9.
Pacers favored by 7.
Yeah. No, they should blow out at home. That's what they usually do. They're a dominant home team when they win. They should absolutely win that game by more than 7.
The only thing that gives me pause is that I have a hard time believing that the Hawks were really good just because they were at home. Because it's not like they have great home court advantage.
I think it's the routine thing. I really do.
Just the comfort thing?
Also, there is nightlife for visitors in Atlanta.
There's a lot of talk about that, too.
There is a lot of nightlife.
So, Pacers by 7. Yeah. I take the Pacers. And then Thunder 8.5.
Can Kevin Durant be a good player again?
Or will James Harden choke? That's the only two options.
Please let's not do this, basketball world.
Get ready for it.
No, let's not do this. Let's make a pact right now. We can't keep doing this. It doesn't do anything for us.
People that get paid more than you and I do disagree. So.
I mean, there are plenty of times in history where masses have risen up against tyranny. This is tyranny. I am calling to arms. I am starting a revolution. And everyone, you know, people told, I don't know, the Vikings not to pillage. What happened? Now we've discovered America. Pretty sure that's how that worked.
You need to teach history. This is what we need to do. We need to get you on YouTube.
Amazing thing, this isn't even drunk history. This is just history.
We get your lady friend in the background with a chalkboard and like pointing to different things. Yeah. Like make no sense.
Right.
She holds up a raccoon for no apparent reason.
Thunder close it out. Kevin Durant scores 61.
It'd be awful nice if they were to. You and I would get some much needed break because it's going to get tighter in terms of you and I don't want any more of these four game nights.
Right. And Friday we got a four gamer.
We got a four gamer if they don't close it out. If New York and Oklahoma City close it out, then we got two games and that's reasonable.
Yeah. Ideally, we just have a great Durant Harden shootout. Durant hits a game winner to win it. That's best case scenario for us.
I honestly don't care. I'm kind of like, nah, Houston made their point. They won a game. Like,
no, I'm just, we got to stop this tyranny.
Well, here's my thing though. If Oklahoma City doesn't win, like Houston, we agree, has no chance to win. I would rather we get, like, at least the Harden talk will only last for 24 hours. If the Thunder struggle, then we're going to have to deal with it for an entire week of, well, you know, this Thunder team just isn't as good anymore. Yeah. They're vulnerable. They're going to lose, and they're not any good anymore. And I'm like, they're still pretty good. They're a pretty good team.
Save us, Derek Fisher. You're the playoff hero.
I wait for our future. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, buddy.